Ready, set, go!
This is the Checkpoint XP Podcast. Check out our international radio show and daily podcast at checkpointxp.com. Here are your hosts, Nate Bender, Robbie Landis, Norris Howard, and Joe Sloan.
Checkpoint reached.
Hey, welcome to the Checkpoint Podcast on the Westwood One Podcast Network. Everyone's listening. Exclusive, uncensored, and extended conversations from the nationally syndicated crew of the Checkpoint XP show. My name's Nate Benner. I'm joined by the Checkpoint XP crew, Robbie Landis.
What up?
Norris Howard.
What up, though?
And Joe Sloan.
Yo.
So we've got an exciting announcement coming to you in just a second. We're going to do it here on the podcast because what we're going to be doing is going to lead to more podcast discussions and episodes. So stick around. We've got an exciting announcement coming to you in just a moment. But we're going to start off with the way that we always start off the podcast.
With reviews.
With an iTunes review. Real quick, I'm going to remind you guys, since we didn't get an opportunity to last week, since we were out at Frostbite 2019. By the way, shout out to Alex Varga for having us out there.
Thanks, Alex.
It was a great time. I hope you guys enjoyed the podcast. We enjoyed being there. But we are trying to get to what's the total number of
50 for the daily.
50 iTunes reviews for the Checkpoint XP daily podcast,
and 200 for the podcast,
and up to 200 for the regular Checkpoint XP podcast.
Where are we sending it?
So right now, currently, with Checkpoint XP, the regular podcast, it's taking a second to load here. We are currently sitting at a total of 136 reviews. Ooh. On the main show.
All right.
And then for the daily show, don't want to go to Westwood One again. I've got to change to the other one. For the daily show, we are currently sitting at 20 reviews.
Oh, okay.
So 30 to go for that
30
one.
To go.
That's right.
63.
So I just want to say thank you guys, by the way, for all of you that have stopped by the Checkpoint XP daily podcast to leave a review. And so far, this is one of my favorite reviews. I know I say this every time, but you guys really do leave.
They have some good reviews.
Amazing though. Reviews. And this one was particularly touching. This is from Vicious.
Vicious.
V-I-C-I-O-U-S. But it's like spelled in leap.
Oh, no. I was about to say we should call Spike.
Not that Vicious.
Oh, okay.
But anyway, he leaves a 5-star review that says, "So good, it kept me gaming."
Oh.
Did I just blow your mind?
I started listening to these guys 6 months ago. And at the time, I was thinking of selling all my gaming stuff with some serious consideration.
How dare you?
After hearing these guys' enthusiasm and love for gaming and esports, it has reinvigorated my love for gaming. Listening makes me feel like a kid who's got nothing but his console and some snack foods on a Saturday afternoon. Nothing better than that. Thanks, guys. And Norris. Pull my devil trigger. Thank you, Vicious.
Listen, over the years, we've gotten some amazing feedback. We've had people tell us that listening to our show has helped them at difficult times in their life, whether it's waiting out a hurricane or going through a breakup or whatnot.
Reconnecting with their children.
Yes, but that one right there.
That's special.
Rekindling your love of gaming.
That's special. Like,
my heart.
You don't really realize, like, some of the ways that, you know, discussions that we have here reverberate when they go out and meet the general populace.
This is why it's important, by the way, for those of you in chat or those of you listening right now, to share this stuff with other people.
Yeah, you never know what it can end up doing for someone. And it gives you a common point of discussion. Mm-hmm. Because then you can go back to your friend and be like, "Did you hear what they said on that show? What idiots." Or,
"What assholes.
Did you hear what they said on that show? I think that was really smart and insightful." So, you know, like, I think that there's a lot of reasons to share this show with your friends. We encourage you to do that, and we encourage you to leave us some feedback. Let us know how we're doing. Great way to do that is through iTunes. And again, thank you to Vicious.
Now, speaking of group participation.
Yes. Man. Someone is having an aneurysm out there.
No, nah, that's just Grand Theft Auto.
you know, another day in Detroit.
Yeah, but anyway, speaking of group participation, we have resolved as a collective, as a group, to come up with, and this is not the official name, we will drop the official name very soon, the Checkpoint Game Club.
Yes.
Oh, I thought that was the official name.
No, that name sucks.
I don't know that we can like come up with name. A better one.
Of course we can.
Okay.
But
okay.
Here is the Checkpoint Game Club. Once a month, we will all collectively commit to playing a game.
Yes. All four of us.
That all four of us perhaps have not played before. It won't always
have to be
new.
Maybe we wouldn't have played it otherwise.
Maybe, yeah.
Could be new, could be old, could be whatever.
Exactly. Yeah. And we want you guys to play that game along with us.
So we're going to be, much in the same way that a book club does.
Yeah, you meet once a month.
In the next 30 days, all of us who are a part of the club will say, yes, we are going to commit to playing said game. And then at the end of the 30 days, we're going to have a nice big discussion about it here on the podcast. And we've gotten our corporate overlords to allow us to open up the phone lines and let you guys have discussions about said game with us here on the
show.
That
is right. So at the end of the month, whatever game that was in the Gamers Club, you guys will call in, have that discussion with us, agree, disagree, talking about some of the finer points, or maybe, I don't know, to wax poetically about how much you ended up loving or hating it.
Yeah, absolutely. And like we say, it does not have to be a new title. We are looking more at games that we can all easily get access
accessible,
to.
Yes,
we don't want things where you're going to have to go out. Okay, guys, next week we're playing Mother 3. Good luck.
Right.
Like, no.
No.
So, we're looking for games that are easy to access, but that maybe things that, because we don't want to just what if we all played League of Legends this week? Like,
yeah, no.
That's difficult. We're
something that's also finite, that has like a beginning, right, middle, and an end.
Something we can all play we want to expand our horizons a little bit. That is the idea of doing like a book club,
right,
or a movie,
right,
club.
Right.
It's to expand your horizons a little bit.
Yep.
So that's going to be our goal. And with that said, we have selected our first game.
We have Stank Buddha in the chat has already suggested, listen, Undertale's got to be the first one, which is appropriate. Listen, that's appropriate. You gave us all copies of Undertale.
At some point, we will do Undertale, I promise.
Undertale is in there.
What if we've all beaten Undertale by then?
Oh,
okay. I'm not worried about that at all, since none of you have started it.
But you said it would take six hours.
You can finish it, but they still won't
you
have.
You said it would take 6 hours to beat.
They're
going to
finish it just to spite you.
Yeah, yeah,
I doubt it.
Omega Waltall says, let's play Panzer Dragoon Saga. It's only $500.
Do you have Sega Saturns to give to everybody?
It's only $500 on eBay, and there's seven of them in the world.
We have decided on a game, though. It's a game that at one point or other, we all have said that we should check out.
Yep,
it was a darling indie game of last year, Celeste.
Celeste is going to be the first official Checkpoint Gamers Club collective game to play.
So whatever platform you can play it on, whether it's a console, handheld, PC, whatever, play it in the next 30 days, because today's March 1st. So last week in March, we will come back and we'll have a discussion about Celeste. And here's the thing is that, you know, with more of you joining the book club, we're going to be opening up the suggestions on what we should play to you guys as well. So this is, you know, interactive in a way that is much more long term.
Yes.
But we know that, you know, we have some very dedicated fans, some very engaged fans, and we want to, you know, we want to be able to engage with you as well. So, we think that this is a really good way to do that.
And with that said, I just want to make sure that you guys can get Celeste. It is on literally every platform imaginable. The shit is even on Linux. Okay? So you can get it on all your major consoles. It is on the Switch. I'll probably be getting it on the Switch.
I'm getting it on the Switch for
so
sure.
So definitely Celeste is going to be the first game of the Checkpoint Gamers Club. We will all play it. And at the end of this month, we will have our big game club wrap up, where you guys will be able to call in and participate in the discussion.
That's
you
right.
Said that you said it's on Linux.
It is.
All right, Martin. It's on Linux, so you can play it.
There, the
only
one
people
guy
I've ever known who use Linux are named Martin.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, we also want to take a moment to tell you about a new show that we've got coming to the Checkpoint XP family of shows.
Just debuted, I guess, yesterday when you listened to this.
That's right. So not My Player 2.
Not Your Player 2.
Not Your Player 2.
pronouns are player confusing. Twos.
Whatever.
Nah, you're right, Nate.
Player two.
It's not your player two.
That's right. It's not my player two.
You man.
That's right.
It is a.
I had to dig real deep for that one.
Yeah,
right.
It is
a weekly podcast featuring two of the Checkpoint family, Sarah Skopic, who does our news segments and is also the voice of the people.
Yep.
As well as Christine.
Super producer Christine, a.k.a.
The glue that holds Checkpoint together.
Yeah, that's
right.
Teamed up to do a weekly podcast bringing a feminine perspective
to
the world
penises.
Of gaming.
Yes.
Sans penis eye?
No, penises.
No, peni.
Peni
is the correct.
It's penises.
No, peni. Plural of penis is peni.
Sans sausages. How about that, guys?
Sans sausages. I like this. Is getting very Undertale-esque. Anyway. Yeah. If that sounds like something you'd want to check out, we highly recommend it. They just did their first episode. It sounded great. We're very proud of them, and we're looking forward to more great episodes.
Absolutely. CheckpointXP.com to subscribe to the podcast and all the podcasts that we offer here through Checkpoint XP. Again, that's all over at CheckpointXP.com. All right. Let's talk about getting old.
All right. Yep. So this was actually an editorial that I had found from, and forgive me if I'm pronouncing this name of this website. Is it Ars Technica?
It is Ars Technica.
Yeah.
Very
so
well.
Came from Ars Technica, and it was basically the aging gamer. And this guy kind of, you know, was.
So Nate.
pretty much was.
You know what? Fuck you.
Was kind of wondering why, you know, after having loved gaming as a kid and growing up as a hobby and technically actually still loving it, just wondering why am I playing less and less and less.
Because you got shit to do.
I mean, that is part of it, sure. I mean, when you think about the usual adult, you know, you have kids, you have a job that you have to do, you just have less time to do it. But he also talks about not even really enjoying games as much. And I thought that we also might have an interesting take on it because we all get to play games as our
jobs.
None of us have kids, so we don't have to worry about that.
Yeah.
But as I'm reading through this, there are actually certain things that I can kind of relate to in it.
I mean, talking about, first of all, the obvious one is you all have a job that you have to work, right?
Yeah.
But it is more than that. It's not, you know, it used to be you went to school. And when you came home, you did whatever you want. But now it's literally like, okay, well, I get home and I have to take out the trash. I have to get dinner on the table. I have laundry to do. My bathroom's a mess.
Dude, but not even that. Most people's jobs nowadays bleed over into their personal
life
as
well.
So much.
It's true.
The concept of 9 to 5 where you clock in, clock out, and work's over is done.
Mm-hmm.
That era is over. Unless you work like at the plant. You know you're
answering emails
exactly
because I went through that in as it was kind of happening in real time when you know the late I would say the late 2000s where it became official like texting was now basically included on all plans and almost everyone started getting a smartphone. You know, late 2000s, early 2010s, I was working at that time when that transition kind of happened over, and I remember thinking vividly like, hey, wait, when did it become okay for my boss to text me at 9 o'clock?
Yeah.
When did that become okay?
And now it just is. Your boss texts you at 9 o'clock, you just text him back.
It's beyond that. If you don't reply, you can get in trouble at a lot of jobs.
Yeah.
Like, hey, I was trying to see if you could work a shift tomorrow. Where the hell were you? I'm like, in bed.
It doesn't matter where I was. Not on the clock. And I mean, I think that there's a certain. There's a certain pay scale that justifies that too. Like if you're paying me enough to be invested in off hours, I'm not gonna be.
Well,
and there's no like
if you're a salary worker,
there is no clock for you.
Right.
Right. Yeah. Once you're that's so true. Once you're salaried, you're
that's
hours.
A big factor, I think, into why people as they get older
have less
because,
time sure
because they're allocating
older,
less time for
you know,
I mean it's weird because video games go from kind of something that you do when you have downtime to now something that you have to make time for.
Well, one of the other things too that the article mentioned, like as we get older and we become adults, you know, where we spend our free time, we want to make sure that we're getting some type of reward out of it. You know, when you sit down and you play games, there's nothing afterwards that you can say, look, this is what I got. You know, if you work out, you're staying in shape. Even if you're gardening, right? You're getting like food or something.
You, or
like
you
that.
Grow flowers,
exactly.
Or something to look at.
Right,
but,
right.
But you're right. It is kind of like that mental transition you make as you leave high school and go into college. And I mean, a lot of people don't even work in college. But when you start working and getting a paycheck, and you start, you're like, your mind transitions to like that, like, oh, I put in effort, I received this tangible
mm-hmm,
thing.
Mm-hmm.
It can be harder to look at video games and say, like, I put in effort. What is my tangible reward?
Well, and right. For me, that's why I think my love for gaming probably won't go anywhere, because I have a love of reading. And reading is the same thing, where a lot of people sit down with a book and they go, well, what do I get out of it? And most people will say, I don't know, knowledge, empathy, I don't know. But for me, gaming...
Reading comprehension.
Yeah, but for me, gaming's the same thing.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
you get some sort of experience or a perspective you would have never thought of before out of it. As I actually have found that I enjoy narrative games even more
mm-hmm. oh,
now
definitely.
That I'm older.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think the biggest takeaway that I had, or sort of the trend that I saw, and I know that Nate's going to be able to relate to this here, is nowadays there is no shortage of games to play. Like, the variety of games out there is as
sure.
wide as it has ever been.
Oh, no, it's way wider than it's
way
ever been.
Wider.
Like, we can't... Don't pretend that the amount of games that came out in the 90s is even comparable comes out
yeah.
today.
No way. But here's the thing, and again, Nate, I know that this is something you've been doing. I've been spending more of my time playing older games, like playing through the Mass
sure.
Effect series right now. You've been playing through the Fallout series,
mm-hmm.
right? And
yeah.
when I look at all of the...
Well, I mean, it is a little bit different. I have not played through the Fallout
Fair.
Games, although I thought I
Fair.
Had
so
at one point.
It's not a nostalgia thing.
Okay.
Right, it's
sure.
not a nostalgia thing. It's more like because I legitimately found Fallout 76, got into Fallout 76.
But even before that, you were doing the same thing with the Pokemon games, right?
Yes.
What was the last, like, big, new AAA game that you played?
Well, it's... I mean, because, like, it started... It's... Because it starts with, like, the newer game, right? Like,
you play God of War?
Well, hang on. You know, for your analogy on Pokemon,
uh-huh.
it
yeah.
started with Omega Ruby Alpha Sapphire. I think it was Omega Ruby that mm-hmm. I had. I was gifted. My weed dealer had given it to me for Christmas, because I have a weird relationship with my weed dealer.
Right.
He's a really great guy.
Pokemon games.
He's like, yes, and he comes over and we argue about Pokemon, and it's awesome, and I love it.
It's fair.
But
so you didn't buy that, though. You were given it.
Yes, I was given it, and I like didn't play it for like
a while,
yeah. And I started feeling guilty about, like, man, I should go back. I should play this. I really should play it
or give it back.
Yes, and I started playing it, and I really liked what I found, but it was overwhelming. Mm-hmm. So I was like, I kind of gotta like pare down some of these mechanic things and go back. So I went back
to
and
get
I played
the context.
Yeah, like I didn't go all the way back, like,
but like Gold and Silver would be Heart Gold, right?
Heart Gold is
yeah.
where I went back to.
Yeah,
and that was a perfect entry for me to the series. And so yeah, for a long time I was working up through Heart Gold, and then I did Diamond, and then Black White 2.
To my point though, what was the last, like, because I have God of War, I have Spider-Man, I got Red Dead Redemption. I didn't finish any of those, but I have no problem sinking in and refinishing all the Mass Effect games.
But,
so my question
you know
to you
what is
what was, besides going through all these Pokemon games and all the
sure.
Fallout games, when was the last time that either of us actually put time into and bought or finished one of the new, you know, AAA games that's out there?
A super new game. I think it was Metal Gear Solid 5.
See?
That was
a while ago.
That was
yeah.
a while.
Right.
Was a while.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, it was Spider-Man.
Three.
Like, but I totally get what you're getting at, because, like, I'm dealing with the same thing, too, because not only is it going back, for you, it's replaying Mass mm-hmm. Effect, but I had never played them. So I've heard you talk about them. I'm like, okay, I'd like to play. Well, each of those is a 20 to 40 hour commitment.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
That's a lot of time it takes to
sure.
get through that series. You've got people who are, you know, just now getting into like think about like people who just now get into like Fire Emblem or Dragon Quest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well,
people who
you're
are
not
like
having a hard
that,
time.
Well,
you could be going back and playing a bunch of old games.
And I think that's a very real possibility, considering how much of a difference in sales there is between the Switch and the last four
yeah.
Nintendo consoles. So
Sarah right now is trying her damnedest to get me to play through all the Phoenix Wright games. Okay. That's like seven games.
Yeah.
And I'm midway through the third one right now. And it's like, I've got a lot of other games to play. If I actually invested that much time to play all seven or whatever Phoenix Wright games it is, how many more AAA titles do I miss out on at launch?
But Robbie, to your point, is for the same reason where you ever have like your parents or an older sibling or an uncle where the music they listen to is stuck in some era. They may give the newer stuff to, you know, some, they may try it a little bit, have a couple little jams that they rock with, but they got their artists that they rock with right there, and that's their core. That's
You're
what's comfortable
that
for them.
Robbie's Mass Effect fixation is my dad listening to John Bon Jovi on repeat?
Yes. It is the gaming equivalent of that.
Well, I do see
gaming.
This is an interesting perspective. I get the metaphor, all right? But there's something else there to it, because something that this article touches on, there's actually studies relating to this, is that as we grow or as we get older, our motivations also change. What we expect comes from a game, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And we know that gaming, even though, yes, we're all growing up with it, sure, that it's obviously still catering more towards a younger audience, right?
Yeah.
That's why we see, you know, Fortnite Apex is so popular right now, is because the competitive edge in games, that competitive aspect, is something that the younger crowd is more interested in. And as you get older, studies have shown that, like, gamers in their 30s and 40s, they don't care about
the
competitive edge.
No, but here's the point, though, because that is cyclical. Because when games were at the arcades, the competitive aspect was a part of what the industry was built on.
Sure.
The fact of getting the high score, beating not just yourself, but everybody else, right? So then we went through a long period of, what's your main motivation? Story, narrative, that kind of stuff. RPGs blew up in the 90s, and we grew up in the 90s, so that's our expectation for video games.
Right.
Now that we're in the Battle Royale era where story is thrown to the wind and nobody gives a shit about the universe, you find it difficult to connect.
Well,
so your expectations for the game, it's exactly the same as what Joe said. Your folks get stuck in the era where there's a certain type of medium that they fuck with, and they fuck with heavy. And the same thing is going to happen for video games. It's just that video games hadn't been old enough for that to happen.
So I think that's a very interesting insight. And so I think at some point we could start to see the audience fragment. We don't see it a lot right now. I mean, we see it a little bit around certain genres, but I'm saying it'll crack in half where you've got old people gamers and young people gamers, and games that are made for each of those different audiences.
Sure. Yes.
And I think, you know, when you hear old people games, like, it hurts, but guess what
the fuck Octopath is?
That's, yes.
A fucking old people game.
That's exactly it.
Hold on. I have a few statistics for you really quick. So there is a study that the ESA did that reports that 48% of adults over the age of 50 play video games.
Yeah.
What percentage is that?
Half.
48%. Half of adults over the age of 50 play video games. Yeah. Now, 80% of this number plays at least once a week.
That's my dad.
45 play every day. That's my grandparents right there. But only 10% of all of those consider themselves gamers.
Right.
My grandparents won't consider themselves gamers. They play mobile games. Candy Crush and shit like
that's
that.
That's a game.
Still a game, though.
Yeah. Right. But the stuff my dad is playing, he's not going out and playing Apex Legends.
Right.
My dad is playing Streets of Rage for the 18th billionth time.
But that's the difference is, you know, your dad, our generation, and those just a little bit above us, we will age and still call ourselves gamers. That is not a title that we will relinquish.
Well, because that's a self-identity that we've built as we've aged, right? Like, Gen X didn't build the gamer identity. Millennials built the gamer identity.
And the culture around it.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, Gen X pinned their cultural flashpoints around music.
Yep.
And we have used other forms of media. Yeah.
Film and video games.
It seems to be mostly film, video games, comic books, too.
Comic books are big in there as well.
Which is
the 90s explosion of
comic
books.
Which is made very clear to me every time on my Twitter timeline the whole fucking comics gate comes up.
Yeah.
How much of a culture war is existing at the heart of comic books as much as there was around video games. And I first of all, I find that fascinating, but at the same time, I think that it ends up creating this really interesting dichotomy where, yes, like video games have always been kind of a very youth oriented medium. And now that you have those of us that are aging and still calling ourselves and identifying as gamers and still wanting for products that appeal to us and our sensibilities, mm-hmm. I do think at some point that we are going to see, you know, like
that industry split.
The industry will notice that and target it and start realizing that like older style mechanics that may be passe because technology facilitates more interesting battle animations.
Yeah, there's
or whatever,
a market out there that we that can target that isn't interested in Fortnite games.
But it's like the same reason why the Rolling Stones can still go on tour and all types of crazy shit, right? Because there's a whole lot of people that still like the Rolling Stones.
That grew up with the Rolling Stones, yeah.
Of many generations, by the way, because there will be some of the newer generations that fuck with older games.
Oh, yeah.
But that overlap from older people to newer games is a lot more difficult. It is a lot more difficult to get my dad to listen to Migos than it is to get him to listen to Nas. You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So
it's way harder to get him to listen to something that you'd listen to versus you listening to something he would.
No, but that's the exactly.
Yeah, it's way easier to go older.
But at the same time, though, like, dude, when I think about my parents' music, there was a certain homogenous like way that music was being made, and so you didn't like those people that were doing more experimental type of music. You don't have that much exposure to them because those records didn't really like survive.
They were
harder to find. They were harder to buy, and the people who are interested in them were harder to find. But now with you know what the internet does with media, everyone is exposed to everything,
but our
tastes are much, much more eclectic.
Yeah.
And I wonder, you know, when you know, generations you know, from now look back on our generation, what if it's going to seem very chaotic
Like every generation has had their identity, and ours was just borrowed from all over the place.
Kind of, yeah.
The internet.
We're kind of the remix generation. Think about how much remixing plays a huge psychological factor in everything that we do.
Let's play, parody, or music.
But I think
I don't want to hear the original track. I just want to hear the remix.
But I think that is lacking in context of generation before us, because when you look at like the free love generation, that was an amalgamation of a whole bunch of different culture clashes that was happening at the same time. People wearing buckskin and fringe. There were no Native Americans around for everybody to be rocking buckskin
but
to my point is that I get what you're saying about how our culture would be is so fragmented, but at the same time, there are still certain artists, especially in music, that resonate with certain people because they harken back to the older times.
Right.
Like you have artists like Joey Badass who does 90s era New York rap.
Right.
He would not exist 10 years ago or 20 years ago because there would be enough artists still around doing that.
Right.
But he resonates with people our age because we were around when that was the norm.
Well,
same thing will happen to gaming.
I think it's interesting to say that like we would have an easier time getting into our parents' music. Obviously, none of us grew up with parents who had who were big fans of like John Coltrane or Moondog or fucking.
I had a parent who was into Coltrane.
Well, but I mean, like you put on that fucking 28-minute Coltrane one-sided album, and it's like for like 40 fucking minutes, and you're like, "What the fuck is this?"
It's
like
brilliant.
But the first time you hear it, if all you've been exposed to ever is metered time and structured melody and all of these different
and
things,
looped music,
it is fucking mind blowing. Like the first time I heard Moondog, mm-hmm. it was just I'd never heard anything like it, and I think that you know, like. I had a hard time getting into some of my parents' music because my parents had some really eclectic tastes. So I don't know that that's true, because we have to take in the full, we have to take into account the full breadth of the culture at the time and how much that gets kind of pared down to only sort of the cream of the crop.
The great hits.
Yeah, exactly.
But the 90s is the same. Do you know how many weird and middle of the road games came out in the 90s? And yet when you talk about the 90s, you think about Street Fighter, Final Fantasy, and maybe three or four other games, the Mario series, that in the Zelda series. You really only boil down to about 10 series.
No one talks about combat cars.
But exactly. Here's the difference. Here's the difference, though, is that our parents' generation, if they wanted to get into something weird or offbeat from their parents' generation, they had to find it in a dusty trunk in the basement.
Really, or
dig it out of a fucking record store collection or a museum.
You just buy it on Steam.
Right. This is where video games are inherently different being digital products, is that it is so much harder for that digital product to go completely extinct and to never have context for it.
Our weird eclectic shit will still be available 20 years
from now. Right, like no one will ever forget Kid Icarus, find that shit in a dusty box in a basement and go, holy shit, guys, do you guys remember Kid Icarus, and get Nintendo to make a remake. Like, the shit came back around after 10 years because everyone still remembered Kid Icarus, and everyone went, oh shit, what happened to Kid Icarus? We should make another game.
Right, Smash Bros.
That, exactly. Mm-hmm. So our ability to forget things, or for them to fall out of memory, is much more difficult. Remember, Fallout was kind of like a very niche PC game until Bethesda got their mitts on it, right? Yeah. Like, it wasn't like this big mainstream success. It was like, do you remember that weird
survival thing?
Yeah, do you remember that weird game that had super mutants?
And they were just like, take the apocalypse and put it in Elder Scrolls.
Pretty much, yeah. And so, like, the ability for us to forget things and to allow them to be passé is, I think, much more difficult.
I find that interesting, too. Go ahead.
Yeah, the fact that going forward, no one's ever going to forget Bubsy existed, to me, is just really special.
It's beautiful, but at the same time, we had a conversation.
like, as much as we want to, we will never be able to forget that Postal 2 is a thing.
Yeah, but the point is that I remember when we were talking about, like, video game museums and stuff, and I was saying, like, that will kill nostalgia. And if digital goods, what you're talking about is digital goods, the same thing will happen.
Right.
Because how can you be nostalgic about something
that
never went away?
No, that's true. Well, and I think in that regard, like, video game museums have a much more difficult challenge than just to present something with present someone with media they simply forgot about, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's what a lot of museums are. Hey, remember this? Oh yeah, that's a thing. That's what a fucking museum is.
Toe Jam and Earl had a new game come out.
Right, exactly.
Like,
perfect. That's a perfect example.
No one thought about that in 25 years.
So if I was a museum curator and I was tasked with putting together an exhibit about a video game, what I would do is I would find a game, any game, at various stages in development, and show it at the various stages in development, because that's the only real, I feel like people don't get exposed to that part of it about how a game is a evolving piece of code until you solidify, or it used to be until you wrote the disc at the end.
Right. You might not be able to take, Halo 1 and, like, because people are going to be like, yeah, I know Halo, but you could show Destiny day one launch versus Destiny 2 years down the line when people were pretty happy with it.
Exactly. Fallout 76 day one launch
versus two years down the line.
That's what's going to be what creates nostalgia, because, without that, Joe, both you and I are playing on the Sony server right now.
We're playing in 2005 FF11.
Exactly.
Why?
Nostalgia.
That's the only reason. But that's the thing, is that that's a huge motivator. And I think when you talk about getting older and aging as a gamer. That's really the biggest thing, the biggest motivator that's playing on you, because you want to play a game that made you feel the way something else did in the past.
Sure.
That's the whole reason why you keep playing certain genres, right? The reason why you love RPGs is because at some point you played one and it made you feel like no other game. And you want every game to recreate that feeling for you. So I think for as long as gamers have a context for something that they can't necessarily go back and do, you will see that market for older gamers.
How many experiences are like that, though? I feel like, because like, even once we've had an experience in a game, any other game that subsequently tries to copy that experience gets criticized.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of like how many times have I come out of a game with like a that fundamentally changed my opinion of gaming.
The
like,
last
how many
time
times I, have I had that? I've maybe experienced that six times.
Well, because
total.
I can count on my hand.
Yeah, like and but in the same way that not every film is supposed to make you have an epiphany. Not every game is supposed to make you have an epiphany.
That's right.
There are just games.
That's
that can,
fine, by the way.
And that's fine. There are games that can just be good and satisfying and just fun on a visceral
level. But they're life-changing for somebody.
Right.
Like, that's the thing, is that, you know, you want it to exist because it's life-changing for somebody. And, you know, Joe, you were saying, like, you could count on your hand how many times you had that kind of experience. I think that is a very powerful, that's a very powerful tool for, as Robbie was saying, to create a market for people who are older who want those sort of similar feelings again.
Right. Well, that's what I'm trying to get at. It's like Undertale and Life is Strange both fundamentally change the way I view stories and games. Mm-hmm. So, but in today's point, any game that tries to kind of copy what they did is going to get criticized for it. But someone is going to have not played Life is Strange and Undertale, right, and that will be their first context for that sort of thing. Right. It is still important. Not every game. It's one of the oldest sayings in the world. Every great story has already been told.
Sure.
It's what do you do with it and how do you change it?
Sure.
But it's okay to just make something that's fundamentally satisfying, even if it's not a completely original idea. That's
most
fine.
Of the or out of all the games recently, like new games that I've enjoyed, haven't tried to do anything new or tried to be innovative. For example, Horizon Zero Dawn.
Really good sandbox.
But there's nothing new
about
it.
There's nothing new about
but
that.
But it's a great
even
game.
Even robot dinosaurs. Like
Spider-Man. There's nothing new about Spider-Man, but it's a great game.
Yeah, that's just
game.
Batman Arkham Asylum with a full city.
Yeah. It's a sandbox beat-em-up. That's all it is.
Yep.
But it's great.
Yeah. And that's I think, really, you know, sort of the kind of important thing about that is, you know, yeah, like games don't have to be great. We don't always have to necessarily be chasing that amazing experience. Yeah. Like I felt like the first time I ever played Legend of Dragoon, it made me think about games differently.
Right.
And but I've never been able to go through Legend of Dragoon again, mostly because that's an 89-hour game. But
it also looks like butthole.
Well, now it does, yeah. But at the same time, though, like I do take that on to my other experiences, and I do go, well, like can another game ever touch me in the same way in that special naughty place?
But only a handful of games lifetime are going to make. Are going to make that happen to you. It's the same thing that Toby Fox talked about with Deltarune. He's like, I really don't know that I can ever make another game that will make you feel the way that Undertale did. I just don't think I can do that.
Right.
But maybe I can make something that'll make you feel
different.
But the
key is that somebody's going to be nostalgic about it, and somebody's going to get older and try to recreate it for a bunch of old motherfuckers who played Undertale when it first came out, and there's nothing wrong with
that. Well, and even to that statement by Toby Fox, even if he makes another game and it's just Undertale again, some people are going to pick that up before they picked up
that'll
Undertale,
be their first
and
context.
That'll still be it for them. Yeah.
The whole point is getting old ain't necessarily got to be terrible, and the stuff that you like doesn't necessarily have to be terrible because it's old.
And if you got a job that's, you know, pushing you to the brink, and you have kids that won't let you play games, well, I guess that's your
first
own
of all,
fault.
Those are terrible fucking kids.
Yeah,
yeah.
By the way,
first of all, you tell those kids, sit your ass down. We're playing my game tonight.
Yeah.
And pro tip, give them a control and let them think they're playing.
Nice.
That's a good one.
You want to talk a little esports?
Yeah, yeah. Let's run down the weekend in esports.
I got to tell you, if this esports look ahead looks sounds a lot like last week, it's because it's almost the same. We've got more NALCS, We got more Overwatch League. We got more Call of Duty World League. We got more National PUBG League. And IEM Katowice finishes up this week. And so, oh, by the way,
the Renegades did get bounced. That's unfortunate.
But we got top four for CSGO happening. We got top 12 for StarCraft 2 happening. By the way, StarCraft 2 on a Friday afternoon when Korea's at 4 a.m. and not watching. 35,000 people watching.
That's wow.
Way to go, StarCraft 2.
Really surprising.
And year 12 of whatever you're on. Not bad. Anyway.
You know, the one bad part about Frostbite, about being there, is that I have no concept of what those numbers, what those returns look like.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah, what the actual viewership numbers. I don't know.
No clue.
But, yeah, I mean, CSGO, 240,000 people watching on a Friday morning. Holy shit. Well
done. That doesn't make sense.
It's insane to me.
That's lots of esports going on this weekend, guys.
It's going to be busy.
Enjoy watching. All right. Well, I think that's going to do it for the Checkpoint XP podcast. Thanks so much for joining us for the Checkpoint XP podcast. CheckpointXP.com is where you can find out more information about the show, interviews from past episodes, and a whole lot more. That's all over at CheckpointXP.com. Stay up to date on all the latest by following us on social media. That's Checkpoint XP on Facebook and Twitter, and Checkpoint_XP on Instagram. And if you like the show, consider dropping by our Apple Podcast feed and giving us a rating and a review. Checkpoint XP is a production of Westwood One and Beasley Esports XP. Our theme is provided by the band Weird At Last. Big thanks to our production team of Rick Scott, Mike Thomas, and Buzz Knight. For the Checkpoint XP crew, Robbie Landis, Norris Howard, and Joe Sloan, my name's Abe Bender. Keep listening.
You've been listening to the Checkpoint XP podcast. Make sure you subscribe to iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Also, tune into our weekly radio show. For more information and the latest on esports and gaming, go to CheckpointXP.com.